listening to SCR, Stratford Community Radio.
We're going to have a bit of a departure today from normal because we did some recording at Stratford Literary Festival the other week. So today's show, we're going to feature my interview with the author, Sophie King, interspersed with, frankly, quite a lot of music, I think, so that my voice holds out to the end. I would, however, like to thank Annie Ashworth and Natasha Roderick-Jones for arranging the interview and allowing us to have half an hour of Sophie's time. It was just before she ran a training course at the festival, and she was very generous with her time and her enthusiasm on the day. And also a big thank you to Sam for recording the interview and taking the photo, which will appear on our This Much I Know Facebook site at some point. You can still send me in questions and comments, info@myscr.co.uk, but what I won't be able to do is get an answer unless Sophie's actually listening and can email me in with an answer if I put the question up. Remember to look at the This Much I Know Facebook page for photos and information about future guests. We had Jonathan Baker with his head girl Victoria Botting and head boy Callum Ashton from Shipston High School. That photo is now up.
MyScr.co.uk.
Normally, we have a guest to ourselves for the duration of the show and we talk about their lives in the context of their favourite music. But today, it's writing and talking all the way. So good morning, Sophie.
Good morning.
It's great to have you back at the Literary Festival again this year. What makes Stratford special for you?
I think it has to be its history. I love Shakespeare and I read English at Reading University in the 70s and Shakespeare was an important part of the course. And I think the fact that you can go back to an amazing place, which always seems sunny actually, it's Stratford, every time I've been to it, I have this vision of sun over the thatched cottage roofs and the pretty high street. Stratford embodies Shakespeare. It's what Shakespeare's all about. So I suppose it's history.
And we have just had his birthday celebrations as well.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And daffodils. Every time I look at a daffodil, I think of that wonderful sonnet by Shakespeare. And daffodils are one of my favourite flowers.
Excellent. We have loads today. Obviously, I'm not going to disabuse you of your view that it's always sunny in Stratford, because clearly it always is, isn't it? But tell us about the focus of your course today.
Well, today I'm going to be talking about how to use your memories to write either fiction or non-fiction. Taking non-fiction first, there's been an enormous trend in the last 5 years, for people to write their life stories. They feel that their story is different from anybody else's, and in fact that is exactly right. The most extraordinary stories come from ordinary people, but you can only write those if you can look back through your memories. Some people block out their memories from situations which are actually too painful to recall. So occasionally workshops like this can bring up things from the past and even help people get on with their lives. But I'm not here from a psychologist's point of view. I'm here to help people use their memories to create a vivid piece of writing.
And do you think, how do you judge whether a story is worth publishing or whether it's just a cathartic piece of work that someone needs to do?
I think that's a really difficult one to answer. If your life story really is so different from anybody else's, and if it's written in such a way that it stops the reader in their tracks, you might be onto something. I mean, for example, Angela's Ashes, which was that wonderful memoir about growing up in Ireland, clearly grabbed the nation's attention a few years ago, but not everyone's life story can be like that. And even if they are, it's not easy nowadays to grab the attention of a publisher or an agent. So I think the best thing is to start writing it and then afterwards think about whether, in fact, it's publishable more for you and your family or for the country at large.
So do you think there is value in people actually just doing the writing for for family history or just for their own personal?
I think it's really important for people to write down their family stories for future generations. I don't know about you, but I can remember my mother telling me things about my family in the past when I was a child, and I would dismiss them thinking, oh, there's my mother rambling on again about the old days, and it didn't mean very much to me then. Now I'm older, my mother is dead, and I don't have many people to ask about those stories to pass down to my children. I can remember some, and I have written some down, and I've actually used some of them in a children's series that I wrote a few years ago called When Mum Was Little, and then the publishers extended into a series called When Dad Was Little, When Gran Was Little, and When Granddad Was Little. And it was a picture book for 5 to 7-year-olds talking about things that happened, because it was aimed at a particular age range, and this was 5 years ago. The gran bit was set in the 1950s, and the mum bit recalled events from the 70s. And it brought out things like the first colour television, first time man landed on the moon. And it was actually quite popular because people love to think about what happened in the old days, and it triggers off their own memories too. So anyone listening to this, I would say definitely write down life stories.
Well, particularly when my children don't actually believe that there wasn't such a thing as a video when I was little.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I can remember my children saying to me, well, they just couldn't believe that the television wasn't ever colour. They just, you know, black and white television, what's the point of that?
Yes, indeed. And my children, without wanting to digress too much, my children can't believe that Doctor Who was ever in black and white, and the fact that it was actually far more scary in black and white than it is in colour.
Very scary. I quite agree with you on that. Yes, yes.
Excellent. Now, one of the things that I needed to clarify when I first came in was that you write with two identities, Sophie King for fiction and Jane Bidder for journalism. So tell us how that came about.
Well, it came about because I just interviewed an NLP expert on the strength of certain words and how some names have more power or more energy than others. And it just struck me that the surname King was powerful, so I put the two together.
Well, I can obviously, being King Turner, I can agree that that's obviously a very sound choice. Are you two people, though?
Am I two people? That's a really interesting question. I think you are. When I write under the name Sophie King, I'm still Jane Bidder. But if someone introduces me as Sophie King, I do find myself wondering, who is this person? And sometimes it can be quite a useful thing to have another persona, as it were. It does make you think differently. Presumably rather like an actor or an actress. But I do get students who say to me that they've had short stories turned down again and again, or novels turned down again and again, and what did I think of a change of name? And I think psychologically that can be quite a good thing for someone to do, because it makes them feel they're somebody different.
I just wondered whether, if you're in the middle of a really juicy plot line as Sophie King, and then somebody calls with something they'd like you to do from a purely journalistic point of view, do you have to kind of, again, from an NLP point of view, step out of one and into the other?
Yes, I like to keep the two completely different. And in fact, I do very little journalism now. I do the odd bit and concentrate primarily on writing my novels and short stories, and also teaching how to write novels and short stories, which I started, funnily enough, only about 5 years ago, and found that I preferred it to journalism, having been a journalist for all those years. I was very surprised by that, and I think that at different stages of your life, you realise that actually it's time to move on to something else. It takes a while to realise you've got to that stage, and then lots of different things happen, and you think, well, maybe someone's trying to tell me something here, and it's time to let go.
So what is it that you particularly like about the teaching?
I think I really like mixing with different people. I like the light that goes on in their eyes when I say something that rings a bell or makes them come out with something they hadn't thought about. I like the rapport. For years and years, I wrote as a freelance journalist while bringing up my three children. Before that, I was staff on various magazines, including Woman's Own, where I interviewed people like Julie Waters. And then I turned freelance when my first child was born and continued. I was very lucky as a freelance because I wrote for all kinds of papers like The Times and Telegraph, and I had regular columns. So I was able to stay at home and do that, and hopefully look after my children. But I'm not quite sure that when you do that as a freelance, you're actually there in mind. You may be there in body, you're not always there in mind, I'm afraid. But that was the idea, theoretically. And now my children have virtually grown up. Two are in their 20s and one's 19. I actually really like having more time with people around me.
And what, in terms of being an author, what's the best bit about that?
The best bit about being an author is that you don't live in the real world. You can create your own little fantasy land and you can be on your own. I've always enjoyed my own company. I love sharing my life with certain people, including my children and my new husband and my dog. But I also very much need time on my own, and I need time with the people I create in my head.
This is Stratford Community Radio.
How do you keep the motivation going, though? Because I guess a lot of people think they have one book in them, but if you're suddenly saying, right, I am an author, that means that you can keep producing new and original storylines.
I think if you're a writer, and I do believe that writers are usually born writers, but they don't always discover that until a certain stages of their life, which is why you hear about people perhaps not getting published or not writing their first book till they're 60 or so. I think if you're a writer, you always have ideas. My problem is not how do I have the motivation to write my books, it's how do I have my motivation to get on with the other bits of my life, like getting the Hoover out, which I'm very bad with. I never have any problems with ideas. They come to me all the time.
So how do you sort of file away the ideas and decide which idea goes with which story?
I mean, that's quite a good point. I write copious notes on little scraps of paper and on my wrist in Barrow, and I leave myself notes on my aunt's phone at home. But in theory, I have several ideas books. My husband is always buying me lovely little books. He comes back with them and I write my ideas down in them, but then I lose them, or I put them in the bottom of one of my many handbags and then discover them later. But if I'm working on a particular novel and I'm just finished the first draft of something at the moment, those ideas are with me all the time. They'll come to me when I'm doing something else at the most inconvenient time, such as driving, so then I have to pull in and write something down. And some of them are strong enough to stay in my head. Others will come to me at the end of an evening, just when I'm going to sleep, and you think, it's such a good idea, such a good plot pusher, which is what I call something that will push a plot along, that I won't forget it by the morning. But you do. It kind of floats away. So then I'll turn the bedside light on and wake everybody up, you know, everyone being the dog and my husband, and I'll have to write this note down, so I always keep pencil and paper by the bed.
Well, I noticed that you have a book here, How to Write Your First Novel. Yeah. So in that, does it say, have a good bedside light and jotting pads around the house?
It does. It's full of information like that. How to Write Your First Novel is a book that was published this year by How To Books. And it's full of information and tips about writing your first novel that I learnt for myself, really, over the last few years. It talks about how to get ideas, how to construct plots, and it's available from most bookshops and also Amazon.
And for people who would like some one-on-one training from you, as well as the course that you're lecturing on today, there are other ways that they can get some of the Sophie King magic, aren't
there? Yes, that's very kind of you to mention that. Yes, if they go onto my website, there will be details on how they can sign up for online courses. I also do a manuscript appraisal service, so I'll give advice to people if they send me their first three chapters and their synopsis. I will look at that for a fee. I keep my prices quite low, and all the details are on my website, which is www.sophieking.info.
That's something that is a scary point for a budding author, isn't it? When you actually have to take your work public and get someone to have an opinion on it.
Well, I think it's very scary. You are alone with your characters for 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, however long it's taken you to write that book. And suddenly you kind of have to undress with it in public to see if anybody thinks it's any good. And that's actually where people can get very upset, because writing is a very subjective subject. So one person might love it and another might loathe it. And I constantly hear from students who feel dejected and rejected because they've shown it to someone who doesn't think it's any good. And I say, well, actually, there may well be somebody out there who does think it's good. And just because some people have said, no, it's not for them, doesn't mean it's not for somebody else. Having said that, it is a very difficult climate out there at the moment. And it would be wrong for me to say, just show it to an agent and he'll flog it to a publisher and you'll get published. It's always been a tough market, getting a book published, and at the moment it's even tougher. To get a novel published, you really need an agent to take you on. To find an agent, you need to go through the wonderful manual Writers and Artists Yearbook, or somehow talk to people who might know of an agent, and you are quite likely to get rejected by several agents until hopefully one day somebody says, yes, I'll take you on. Even then, there's no guarantee. Far from it. The agent has to get a publisher interested. So this is not for the faint-hearted. This is for somebody who needs in their dreams to get published in order to continue. Having said that, there are other ways to get published. You can self-publish. You can go online. There are various websites such as youwriteon.com. I believe that's the title, youwriteon.com. And you hopefully might get a publisher looking at it who will pick you up. There are some fantastic writing magazines out there, Writers News Writing Magazine, which you can get from newsagents and by subscription, and they have lots of tips on agents who are just setting up, or online websites that can help.
I guess it's one of those things that if you've got the passion and the drive, then ultimately, hopefully, you can make it happen.
You have to have passion and drive, otherwise your writing wouldn't leap out of the page, and otherwise it wouldn't work. Having said that, people who find this too much of an ordeal to go through might just want to write for their own enjoyment, and that's absolutely fine, or for their children.
MySCR.co.uk.
Have you ever spotted anyone who you think, well, this person is really going to be the next blockbuster writer?
Well, I've spotted people whom I think have a voice. Finding your voice when you're writing is one of the most important things, and is something I try to help people do during my classes and also my online courses. And basically that means finding the way in which they write best, in which a way also which is different from other people's, a way which creates a novel or a short story that leaps off the page so that it's different. And yes, I have got one of my students an agent. She's not published yet, but fingers crossed. And I'm helping somebody at the moment write something which I think is very different, and that actually I've suggested she contacts a newspaper about, because I think it'd be a great article.
And I hate to ask this really, but the flip side, how do you manage people's expectations when you think maybe they're not commercial?
You have to let them down. Well, I was going to say you have to let them down gently, but actually it goes back to the subjective thing. I might not think they're commercial, but somebody else out there might think they're wonderful. I mean, you and I probably both read books that we think are appalling and we don't know how they got published. So clearly somebody out there did think they were worth publishing. And that's why if somebody turns you down, it's important to pick yourself up, dust yourself down, and send it off to somebody else, because the next person actually might like your work.
Well, I have to say that's very apposite given the book club I'm in, that someone recommends a book that they absolutely eulogise about. They love it. They couldn't put it down. And somebody else in the book club says, well, I got to page 3 and then stopped.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think we're all different. We all buy different sofas, different houses. We choose different husbands. Thank goodness we choose different clothes. So our taste in literature is bound to be different. But I do think that anyone listening in who's wanting desperately to get published, the most important thing is to write about what they feel passionate about and to keep trying different genres. A genre is a type of a book. I tend to write funny but serious books, mainly for women, although I do have male readers too, between the ages of about 18 and 80. They cover all kinds of modern problems. For example, my current novel, is that right if I mention that?
Please do.
My current novel is called The Wedding Party, and it's about a middle-aged couple that get married. One of them's been married before. The story is told through the eyes of four people going to the wedding. So it's told through the eyes of the groom's former wife, who's now about to get married to somebody else. It's told through the eyes of the groom's grown-up daughter, who's married herself with young children. Through the eyes of the vicar, who's a woman vicar, who's come late to the church, having been in advertising herself, and she has to cope with a redundant husband and two very tricky teenagers. And through the eyes of the wedding planner, who isn't as organised as she could be and is still looking for Mr. Right. So there, you'll see there are some elements of that which are quite light. such as The Wedding Planner, but there are some very there are some dark streaks in it too. For example, the vicar has to decide whether she can forgive somebody who's actually seriously hurt one of her teenagers during the novel. And the ex-wife has to work out her own emotions about whether she really does want to get married again for the second time. So it's kind of a mixture.
But then that probably reflects what's happening in a lot of people's lives, which do alternate between comedy and pathos a lot of the time.
And that's actually another very important point about writing books. You need to write about subjects that people will identify with and say, yes, that's me. And if you can do that, then you are roping them in. I mean, writing, I always say, is a bit like fishing. You're throwing your bait into the river, you're throwing your words in. And if somebody bites, it'll be because they recognise that bait. They'll say, yes, that's the situation my sister-in-law was in, or yes, I know what that's like, and therefore they'll want to read it.
There is a section in that book that I was reading, and I thought, my goodness, she's actually inside my own head at that point. So, yes, oh, definitely. How do you actually distill that, your knowledge and your creativity, into something that you can effectively teach to other people?
I take it in sections. I have courses on how to find the right ideas, how to develop characters, how to write dialogue. And basically all I do is tell them what I learned for myself over the years and try to make it as practical as possible.
Sounds excellent. What is next on the horizon for you book-wise?
I just finished the first draft of something a little bit different, so we'll wait and see what happens to that. I've also got two other ideas that are nagging at me, tapping on my head, and thinking about what I'll do with those. And I'm still writer in residence of a high security male prison, so I do that I do that 1 week and four at the moment. So I'm pretty busy. Yeah.
What's the writer-in-residence work like?
The writer-in-residence work is very interesting. There are only a limited number of us in the country that do it. We go into prisons and we help men and women write their life stories and to write short stories and novels. It is a very good way of helping people come to terms with what they've done in the past and hopefully reassessing the future so that they live lives that don't break the law.
So remind us again, for budding authors out there, remind us of your website again so that people can find out more about you and the courses that you're on.
That's very kind. It's the ubiquitous www. Dot, and then Sophie King, which is spelled S-O-P-H-I-E, King, K-I-N-G, and there's no dot or anything dramatic in the between, so it's just www.sophieking.info, as in short for information. So it's I, N for Norman, F for Freddie, O.
And if you had to leave somebody, a budding author, with a few words of wisdom and encouragement, what would they be?
It would be start now. Literally start now, because one of the other big problems that I hear again and again, and which I had to grapple with, was time. So people will say to me, when I've got time, when I retire, when I do this, but sometimes that time never comes. So it might be a question of, dare I say it, not reading the newspaper and clawing back that extra quarter of an hour a day to write instead. It might be getting up a quarter of an hour earlier, it might be going to bed a quarter of an hour later. Even if you just write for a quarter of an hour a day, that will build up and you'll be surprised at what you can come out with.
Excellent. Can I say, Sophie, thank you so much for taking time out. I know you've got a whole raft of budding authors coming in here very shortly. So thank you very much indeed. It's been fascinating to hear how to become an author and also your journey. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
This is Stratford Community Radio.
An angel has been sent to help my voice today in the person of Helen Conn, who's Portia's Conn's mother. Portia was on Adrian's show, has been on Adrian's show a couple of times. And last time she was on, I asked if I could have a CD. And Helen has very kindly come in to give me a copy of the CD. And I have persuaded her to stay for a few minutes and tell us what's new in the world of Portia, because it sounds like you've had a fairly exciting time. Tell us all about your travels and Portia's tour.
Oh, right. Yes, Portia's, excuse me, has just completed a tour in the south of England. She missed the first 4 days, unfortunately, because we got stranded in Canada due to the Clough, the eruption in Iceland, and resumed the tour starting from Portsmouth. Then she went to Brighton and then all the way up to Ipswich, then Guildford, and then finished the tour here in Stratford-upon-Avon. And that was her first tour, and she enjoyed it, and it went well.
Who was she touring with?
With a band called Ingratitude, which I believe they come from Somerset.
And one of the things I've heard is, and sounding that that agenda, the itinerary you've had, sounds not exactly designed with smooth travelling in mind. But apparently it's all down to where you can get the halls booked, isn't it, rather than making a sensible progression around the country.
Yes, it's all related to, you know, what the promoters can come up with, and you know, the dates that are available.
And how was it back with her home crowd?
It went well, but because the majority of her friends are studying A levels, this isn't the best time to for them to go out in the evening. So it could have been a lot better.
Gosh.
The attendance at Cox's Yard, but as I say, we were away immediately before the tour. And during the tour, it was very difficult to drum up a lot of support at this time of the year.
But everyone knows how talented she is, so I'm sure it's all good experience for her.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
what's on the cards now?
At the moment, she's due to do to record her EP, which it will be in the summer. There isn't a date yet when that's going to happen or the release for that either. So that's as far as I know at the moment. Oh, no, there's something else. What is it? She's playing at the Purple Turtle in London, which is in Camden Town, on the 21st of May, which I think is a Friday. And also sometime in May she's playing up in Leeds, accompanying Mimi Sawyer. And I don't know what the venue is.
That sounds really exciting. And you have to travel with her, don't you?
Well, yes, most of the time, yes, to ensure that she gets home okay and, you know, doesn't hang out with the musicians too late at night.
Or at least if she does, you can hang out with them too.
I won't be allowed to.
How is that for you? Are you enjoying the process?
Yes, yeah, I enjoy it at the time. I enjoy watching the bands at the venue. Initially, my first impressions are, didn't like the sound of them. But then their music grows on you. The more you hear them, the more it grows on you. And of course, the band members are all such nice lads, and you get to know, you meet nice people.
Which is good, because there are a lot of tales about the music industry folk being less than friendly. So if the ones that you're in with at the moment are, then that's probably a good thing.
Yes, yeah, they're youngsters, you know, perhaps have just finished or completed a degree, and you know, they're just really nice people, really.
And yeah. Has anyone got any fancy riders? Hot and cold running, warm white kittens, or no blue M&Ms or anything like that? Or don't you tend to get that?
I don't know what you're talking about, Jackie.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Mariah Carey is always meant to ask for fluffy white kittens in her dressing room.
Right.
Which band is it that said no M&M, no brown M&Ms, or was it no blue M&Ms?
Oh, yes, yeah, it rings a bell now.
Yes, it's one of the older generation rock bands, I think.
Oh,
so
right.
I didn't know if they had.
No, none of them have yet, you know, sort of shown their eccentricities yet. I think they're all in the early stages of... you know, being in the music business.
Keenness rather
yes.
than diva.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent.
MySCR.co.uk.
You've been listening to your radio station, Stratford Community Radio, and I'd like to say a huge thank you to Sophie King, even though she's not here, and a huge thank you to Sam for all the technical input. Next week, it'll be another chance to listen to one we made earlier, because I shall be comparing the fashion show at Val Rainbow's Hafler at Shipston High School. So do tune in for that, and then I'll be back the week after, and if you look at the Facebook page, this much I know, there will be details of guests coming up. Do look at the Facebook page for the latest information and photos.
You're listening to SCR, Stratford Community Radio, online at myscr.co.uk.